Hello, welcome to Zero Hanger TV. First week after the first weekend of action, after opening round, plenty to dissect and to do it. This week is Aiden Cellini, a Zero Hanger rider, replacing Phoenix. Don't mind the change.
Thank you very much. I'm kind of glad to be here. Sorry about that, Phoenix, but yeah, I'm excited.
That's all right. In his absence, we might be able to put on a decent show. So a little bit to preview this week. Obviously, after the opening round, we'll kind of discuss whether we liked it or not. Certainly some mixed reviews across the footy landscape, both in the media and from a fan's perspective, as well as some players and coaches had their say. We'll have our first rookie rankings of the year, and our first votes are in for the 2024 MVP award. So plenty to dissect. But yeah, firstly, welcome onto the show.
Thank you.
Just recently joined us and avid footy fan, Pies fan.
Yes, big Pies fan. I'm obviously very excited based off last year's results, but opening round wasn't as good with obviously the Giants taking the cake by 5 goals or so up at NG Stadium there. But keen to obviously get some cracking here.
Yeah, some good wins obviously on the weekend for Gold Coast, Sydney, GWS and Carlton in particular. Fantastic comeback. So the spectacle itself, I think most of the games put on a pretty decent show. Thursday's was a bit up and down. Friday's probably could have been the best game we'll see all year. And both Saturday games certainly, it was tight at one point and then they probably went a bit back and forward. But, big win for the Gold Coast, exactly what they needed in front of their home fans. Seemed like most crowds were sold out, or at least were sold out pre-game, and we might not have had capacity, but sellout's still a sellout. And then TV ratings solid. So from a data and kind of what AFL House will want to see, they'll be pretty wrapped with the result. But how did you kind of find opening round, or the first edition of opening round?
Yeah, opening round I think was a great initiative by the AFL. Obviously, they're looking to expand the game both in Queensland and New South Wales and those states there. And obviously giving them the position to just host their four teams that are up in those states, the ability to host big games and obviously get those sellout crowds and have a bit of a more focus on those teams and those games, I think was a great idea by the AFL. And it clearly worked. I mean, three of those clubs obviously got over the line, with obviously Brisbane not being the only one to register a win. But in terms of, the initiative, I think the AFL has done really well as a first step towards obviously growing the game. And obviously the ratings and the crowd numbers showed that. But I think there's obviously a lot of improvement areas as well. But obviously, the first step is obviously a good one in the right direction.
So what did you kind of think could be the biggest thing or easiest thing to change if we were to go again next year and they wanted, four games up in those northern states? What can we kind of add to or subtract from what we had this year?
Yeah, well, personally, maybe not necessarily in the short term, but definitely in the long term. I felt that with the other 10 teams being absent from the weekend, it didn't really feel like a genuine season opening weekend of AFL football. Obviously, Sunday was a missed opportunity potentially to host a game. Now, whether that mean a fifth game or two Victorian clubs or South Australian or WA clubs making the venture up there, that could have been an option as well. But in terms of long term, I would love to see the AFL somehow implement all 18 clubs across the two states. Now, admittedly, I'm not too sure how that might work, but just taking a leaf out of the Gather Rounds book, obviously, the one and one from South Australia's point of view in terms of that weekend where you saw all 18 teams compete for premiership points, it was just a buzz that, you can't even compete with, let alone, try and, replicate anywhere else. So I think if the AFL can try somehow manage to get all the 18 clubs up there, I think that was definitely something to be worked toward. But as I said, it's definitely a step in the right direction. It gives those four clubs who are in Queensland and New South Wales a chance to show off their state, show off their stadiums, and obviously try to create a bit of a buzz around their local, towns and cities as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think, it was a great idea. Four great matchups, two preliminary final rematches, Sydney hosting the first game of the season against a fellow premiership contender. Then you had the whole Damien Hardwick story. So the games they picked, I think you probably couldn't get better out of the four they chose. As we said, as a spectacle, fantastic all four games. And then, it's kind of just this interesting lead into round one where we will have all nine games. And then the weeks after, so rounds two, three, I think five and six is where we'll have two buys for those that competed. And I think by the end of round six is when we'll have the full scope of where the opening round was a success. But when you have these buy rounds and, coming up, I think after this week and heading into next, you'll have, I think, Brisbane and Carlton have buys. So, for those couple of teams, more likely, Carlton in this situation who played interstate, will play their traditional Thursday night game against Richmond, and then they'll have the week off, and then they'll be seeing 16 other clubs play and they'll get to miss out that week. And then the same for Collingwood in a few weeks' time. Melbourne and Richmond do the same. Although I think their bye works in their favour, given that they'll have that Anzac Day Eve game that falls on a Wednesday. So that extra break is probably a pretty good time for them. But like I said, I think you get the full scope. I liked it. I'm about it again. And then, you know, when Adelaide's gather round kind of contract runs up, do they move to New South Wales and or Queensland? Like you kind of said, getting more teams kind of active and involved might be the way to go. I like how they kind of take a step away from the Victorian-centric, you know, view. And, you know, you kind of just make it a non-Vic round. You know, do North and Hawthorn host separate games in Tassie? Do you have the SA clubs and the WA clubs hosting a few games? I think in that regard, though, you will have, you know, quite a tight push. But I think it does equal out, particularly when you've got two Vic clubs hosting games in Tassie. You won't just have two Vic clubs going head-to-head in a non-Vic state outside of those two. So certainly could work in that regard. But, yeah, at the same time, do you ever just make it a split round? Do you just have four games this week, five games next week? The only caveat that comes with that as well is that if you want the big Victorian clubs heading north, you're going to have the less crowd pulling clubs, you know, playing this week coming up, and it probably takes away from round one or whatever you want to call it in that scenario. So yeah, there's a bit that they'll get to work with, but overall I think it's a success, and yeah, there'll be a bit to play out over the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously it was kind of a great start into season 2024, obviously with 10 teams still sitting on the sidelines, but sounds like in all reports, they're all itching to go. Obviously, their season starts now and they obviously want to get their years off to a strong start. Obviously, like a few clubs did over the weekend. So it's definitely season 2024 is well and truly underway.
Yeah, I think it won't really deter from crowd numbers for this weekend either. Still get 85, 90,000 plus at Richmond and Carlton, and then Sydney and Collingwood at the G the night after, where the Pies unveiled their flag. Should be getting a pretty similar number. So it's not going to be really take away from key metrics for those games, I wouldn't have thought. Moving on, MVP votes are back for 2024 following the last few years. I think this is our fourth installment of doing these votes, and only one perfect game to come out of opening round. Obviously, there are only four games, so similar. By the end of round six, things will kind of even up a little bit. But Matt Rowell, Gold Coast Matt Rowell, taking out a bit of a lead after opening round. 20 clearances, second most in a game since the stat was recorded. But, you know, 30-odd touches, I think 26 contested possessions, easily best on ground. But plenty of Suns also getting to work in that midfield group. Harry Mackay was pretty big. Brody Grundy and Isaac Heaney, very strong for theirs. I think Charlie Kerner was the best that actually pulled out of that Friday game. And then, you know, you even look at the Pies-Giants game. Plenty of spread votes across those as well, as you can look at the leaderboard. But what was your kind of takeaway? Who was your standout from opening round?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's pretty hard to go past Matt Rowell, obviously, with that perfect game, the record amount of clearances, or seconds, sorry, as you said, since the stats been recorded. But it's just good to see, you know, of a player, obviously, his status and stature kind of start making claims as some of the best young players to come into the competition and start making their claims as the best players in the competition. Obviously, he's got Noah Anderson as his right-hand man and Toot Miller. But it's nice to see, you know, that he's winning the ball inside clearly by, obviously, the absurd start that he somehow produced against the Tigers and on the weekend. But obviously one of his teammates, Will Powell, who has been battling injury. I think he had a knee injury last year during some time. He was very, you know, instrumental off halfback. You know, he really started Gold Coast kind of springboard off that high half back line. Obviously, Dima Hardwick's come into the coaching lineup and he's really tried to implement a very quicker, much quicker, maybe even more chaotic game, maybe similar to Richmond of 2017, 2018, but maybe with a bit more organisation back there. And Will Powell was definitely one of those to really drive that. Obviously, you got key defenders down there doing their part and locking down some, you know, players like Noah Bolton and the like, but you do need players that can use the ball really well off half back to really, as I said, go from D50 to front 50 and obviously start putting that scoreboard pressure on, which obviously Ben King and a few others did at the Suns as well. But obviously, as you mentioned, the Giants had a spread of the load on the weekend. Obviously, it was a pretty complete performance from the preliminary finalists last year. Unfortunately, obviously, they lost last year, but they did get their revenge, I guess, this year, if you'd like to see it that way. You know, as you said, you can see all over the board that they were just super, you know, from the midfield group with Tom Green, but then obviously Callum Brown is a bit of an unsung hero, popping up with five goals and really kick-starting that Giants side to obviously a great victory to start their year as well.
Yeah, well, just looking at the leaderboard and a few names you mentioned, there's a counting down from 10. So Will Power got 11 votes, puts him in the top 10 to start. And teammate Ben King for his 5-goal performance ahead of him with 12 votes, along with Brent Daniels, who kicked 4 goals in that Giants win. And Jack Viney on 12 votes as well. I think he's the only player to feature in the top 10 who didn't get a win in opening round. Ahead of them, Tom Green, 14 votes. Charlie Curnow, 15 votes. And then tied for second, Cal Brown, Brody Grundy, Isaac Heaney, all 18. And then, as mentioned, Matt Rowe, 20 votes. So it'll be pretty interesting to see this time next week what that leaderboard looks like, given we'll have a new, I guess, further 9 matches. A few of these players certainly could poll again and put themselves in a great position before they have their respective buys. But yeah, Matt Rowe, we do often see a few players come out of the blocks with a few perfect games to start the season. I think Luke Davis-Uniac and Mason Wood did pretty similar last year. I think Nick Dacos as well was a really strong starter and got very close to taking out the award in 2023. So we'll see who can, I guess, rival Marcus Bontempelli's reign after he took out the award in last season. And then moving on to our rookie rankings, an award that saw Harry Schiesel claim it last year. Now, just to flag some criteria for people watching or reading in our rookie rankings throughout the season, only players eligible are ones that haven't played a game prior to this season. So while some players like a George Wardlaw or a Sam Darcy might be eligible for the Rising Star, not so for our rookie rankings. As long as a player, no matter how old, hasn't played before round or opening round this year, they'll be eligible. So that goes from Charlie Dean on the weekend, who was a mature age recruit a few years ago, to Sean Manor, who's 26, 27, both eligible as rookies in our rankings. Just really need to make sure that they hadn't played a game. So really there were only 5 eligible players on the weekend. And as we start with the top 5 anyway, that kind of suits our rankings quite nicely. Now they'll grow across the year. After round 6, we'll extend that to a top 6. By after round 12, it'll be a top 7. And then after round 18, it'll be a top, 8. So just to start our rankings, and what might work from 5th overall was Charlie Dean, who I thought had still a very strong performance for a debut coming up against a great opposition and a forward line where you've got Jack Riccardi, Jesse Hogan and Aaron Cadman as your tools. And then, as we mentioned, even Cal Brown as well, factor him in, Brent Daniels. They caused absolute havoc and were very efficient in the front third for GWS. But Dean, I think solid overall, mostly went head to head with Cameron, had a couple wins, as did Cadman, and it was a pretty even contest in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good sign for Pies fans, obviously heading into the future with Jeremy Howe probably nearing the end of his career, that there might be someone to obviously replace him down back. Obviously Nathan Murphy's future is uncertain as well. So the fact that, he got this game under his belt, admittedly maybe not his best game. He'd definitely put his hand up to say he could have done a bit more, but I think a lot of the Pies players could do the same. It's obviously a great experience and exposure at the level. Fly McRae, obviously the coach of the Pies, is big on, giving these type of players a chance at the top level, and obviously he'll learn so much from that heading into maybe, round 1 against the Swans and further on if he keeps his spot in the senior side. Obviously, as I said, with Murphy, obviously unsure if he's going to be returning to football anytime soon or even maybe this year, depending on how he goes with his ongoing concussion battles. But yeah, with obviously number 4 there, Harvey Thomas, he was a GWS Academy product, taken with pick 59 from last year's draft, kind of a bit of a smoky in terms of those who probably weren't tipped to play. Definitely not in round 0 or opening round.
Pick 59 last year in November and straight into an opening round side's a good effort.
Yeah, and coach Adam Kingsley just believes that his pressure and his forward craft is something that the Giants maybe needed a little bit more. Obviously, Brett Daniels and Toby Bedford really play that two-way running role in between the arcs, probably better than most players do in the competition as a duo. So maybe someone to stay a bit more at home at the feet of a Jesse Hogan or Aaron Cameron when they do bring the ball to ground. That's where Harvey Thomas, and I mean, he, had 3 goal assists alone. The Giants were just on, and he was obviously one of those aspects of the Giants that the Pies just couldn't deal with on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think similar to Dean, numbers don't jump off the page, but you kind of watch what he did and when he was involved. Certainly had an impact, pressure, big tick, and set up 3 goals and second efforts as well. I think when he turned over the ball at one point, quickly got possession back and set up a major. So that was pretty strong performance from someone that, like you said, probably you wouldn't have thought would be a chance of a debut only a couple months ago. In third spot, Seth Campbell. Probably a similar one to Thomas as well, another small forward, but one that I wouldn't have thought would be as close as he was to an AFL debut. So fantastic to see him not only step up at senior level, boot a couple goals, have a bit of an influence. I think that Tigers only had 2 or 3 multiple goal kickers, and him being one of them is a great sign and likely places him in the selection frame again for a round one showing against Carlton. So great from Seth Campbell. And our top two, a couple of demons really started the round quite strongly. So Caleb Windsor at two, Blake Howes at one. Overall, we'll talk with Windsor first. Probably what we came to expect from him. He wasn't going to find a lot of the ball, but when he did, offered plenty of pace, plenty of run, and some clean kicking and smart ball use.
Absolutely, yeah. Wins obviously showed over the preseason that he's there and his aggressive nature of style, especially playing on that wing and maybe through the half forward line, obviously excites Simon Goodwin and his teammates. He can clearly break lines and obviously get that ball into the forward line to, you know, one-on-one contests where the Demons do need, because they're a bit, I get short-staffed at the moment with a few players kind of out of form, you know, especially based off last season, and obviously maybe not, you know, the height that they did have in that premiership winning year in 2021. So they do need to look at different aspects and ways to, I guess, gain forward momentum and have look at scoring shots and opportunities and so forth, and maybe adding that, you know, that fleet of foot, that quick ball movement to get players like Fritch out one-on-one, or, you know, Kaiser Pickett is probably likely to come back in as well this week from suspension, you know, players like that to give him a one-on-one chance will more often than not actually win those and obviously get the score on the board, which the Demons clearly do need.
Yeah, did a solid job when you also factor in he's coming up against someone like Errol Goulden on the wing. I think James Jordan, Braden Campbell, some guys who are certainly more, I guess, versed at AFL level than he is. So fantastic on his debut. But Blake Howes, yeah, I think probably unlucky to not get the Rising Star nomination. Matty Roberts did a fantastic job in the same game, though, to be fair. But yeah, Howes out of the five for our rookie rankings was certainly a standout, leading the game for intercept possessions for his side. Certainly stood up when, I think, you know, Jake Lever copped a bit of a tag role from Robbie Fox in that kind of reverse, you know, attacking tag role position. So along with Adam Tomlinson and Stephen May, Howes really had to step up and take on some of Lever's normal, you know, intercept work. And I think he did fantastically. He had a few shaky moments, as you can come to expect with a first-year player. But I think as the game went on, certainly seemed to mature in it and really stood tall as a third tall option.
Absolutely, yeah. I think they've got a good one there, the Ds with Blake Howes. Obviously, will take some time to find his feet at the level, but obviously his versatility at the ground and obviously being able to play, you know, different types of roles, especially in that back line, will definitely hold the Demons' defence in good stead.
Yeah, probably a pretty good pickup. You know, only drafted a few years ago, so they've done well to kind of hold him over time. He's also had some injury issues during his time at AFL level, so great to see him get his chance and certainly take it as well. That will wrap up today's episode of Zero Hanger TV. Obviously, you can head to our site for all our latest AFL content, and on top of that, head to our YouTube page for all our latest episodes, as well as where you get your footy podcasts.